Sally ready?
Okay, Sally.
Okay, we're ready.
Wait for the others, because this is just public works.
Yeah, okay, go.
Morning, I call this meeting of the Public Works Committee to order, Public Works Parks, Labor, and Transportation. We have four bond acts before us this morning, all dealing with the community college. Good morning, just for the record, could we...
Public safety.
Have you introduce yourself to the committee?
Yeah, hi, Kevin Garvey, I'm the Director of the Physical Plant at Westchester Community College. I'm here before you for WCC 57, utility drainage for the Student Center. The WCC 68 Administration Building.
Right.
WCC 70 Physical Education Field Improvements, and the Physical Education Building.
Very good.
Renovations.
Let me just point out to the members of the Budget Committee, we've already dealt with these issues, so Public Works is just going to quickly deal with it.
Okay. We appreciate that. The budgetary considerations were handled by budget. The substantive aspects of these items are before us this morning. The members are, I know they're familiar with the items, however, I appreciate you coming over and being with us this morning in case there are any questions. Why don't we just go down very quickly, if we could just go down in order, could you just give us a brief summary as to what these individual bond acts will be doing?
Certainly. With the utility drainage for the Student Center, it's basically upgrading electrical services and also the sanitary and rain discharge off the site. The administration building is also renovations to the interior of the building, including the HVAC, the flooring, things of that nature. The physical education building, the building itself is built in the early 60s and hasn't been rehabbed since. We plan on introducing air conditioning to the gym. It hasn't been air conditioned since it was built. And the fields are for drainage and also bleachers.
Mm-hmm. As you're facing the building, these are the fields now that are on the right-hand side?
It would be Barry Field on the right-hand side, right. And also the field that's next to the gym, where the baseball field is.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, next to the track.
Next to the track?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Trouble. Okay. All right, at this point, let me open up the floor to if there are any questions, any particular details that you want to inquire about on these four bond acts to the members.
As I said, the state has committed 50% and they're holding to those commitments. They're not cutting anything back.
That's correct.
Anything at all?
Is it three or four?
Four.
Four. Okay.
Four. In order 56, 57, 7, 68, and 70, itemized bond acts 3305, 41, 42, and 47. Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
other questions?
Right. There's just one comment that was raised at the Budget Committee. I think one of the projects I'm looking for that the design is being done, and you have to come back to us. I think the point I raise is from the overall energy efficiency kind of with the NYPA, that just hopefully within that design work, the appropriate analysis will be done as to overall efficiencies. We'll have a chance to see those designs when they come back. These others are for design and construction, I believe.
That's correct.
The
gym.
The gym. So just again, to put on the record again for Public Works, we hope to... the whole issue of efficiencies and sustainability. The college is a good place to try to show the students that we're doing what we can.
After our meeting last week, I reached out again to NYPA. We have a memo of understanding with them mm-hmm. that they will review all of our design projects. I reached out to my representative at NYPA and said that we want to get you in earlier on the process, and she has no problem with that whatsoever.
Right. Sorry. Thank you.
Marable Cruz, if there's anybody yeah. more. So thank you.
Kevin, I know that the work involving the Student Center was pursuant to a master plan that has come up from time to time at this table, the 1999 master plan. Does that pretty much Is that pretty much dictating as the schedule of work and the things that are being brought before the
yes,
board?
Yes, sir. Everything that we that's on the table before you right now is part of the 1999 master plan. The tail end.
Yeah.
It just took a long time for it. It was adopted in 2000, and then we had the GEIS, and then general environmental impact statement that had to be done. And then, big ships turn slowly, so we had to go up to the state and
sure.
get their financial backing and come back. So everything that's here is part of the master plan.
All right. Linda.
I just one comment, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say that the capital project subcommittee has evaluated each of these projects we've gone through and rather detailed mm-hmm. with the college on one, the financial aspect of it, given that the state funds a significant amount of the project, as well as the coordination, given that these projects, once they get going, it is efficient to do them together so that the college will be able to achieve the goals that they're trying to achieve. So I just wanted to share that with the committee.
Very good. Thank you. Yes. That report obviously was given at the budget meeting
yes.
When these were approved by budget. All right, are there any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move all four, if that's appropriate.
Okay. There are no other questions. A motion by Mr. Rogowski for the move the four bond acts that are before us.
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Burrows. One more time, any questions on these items? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. These items that are reported to the floor. Kevin, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, members.
Thank you.
And the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee, already convened, will remain convened for purposes of meeting jointly with the Budget and Appropriations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's 10:22. On behalf of Chair Alvarado, I will call the Budget and Appropriations Committee to order. Let me quickly place the minutes of September 27th before the committee and ask for a motion to accept the minutes.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Williams, second by Legislator Spreckman. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, the minutes are passed. Thank you. Today we have several items. We're first going to deal with Commissioner Laura. We have a couple of items at the Peekskill wastewater treatment plant. It's items 3302 and 3047. The members will look at those two items. We'll take them up first. 3302 is a total residual chlorine reduction project. And 3047 is upgrading aeration digesters. So Commissioner Laura, welcome. Can you make a deal with they're both at the Peekskill plant, right?
Yes, they are. The first one is a request for construction bonding. The project was originally introduced. We have a compliance schedule in our speedies permit that we have to, after we disinfect the wastewater, we would have had to have taken out all the chlorine. We did a study on this, and it was more cost effective not to use chlorine as a disinfectant, but to go to ultraviolet light disinfection. So the board previously had granted bonding for the design and the construction management for $1.165 million, and this would bring the bonding up to $5.748 million to include the construction of the UV facilities, which are in design right now.
So Commissioner, what you're saying is even though we had previously authorized some bonds, which would have, we're dealing with the speedies permit, you're saying the new chlorine contact tank is no longer. That's not the way to go. You have a new way to go with the ultraviolet.
It's more cost effective on a life cycle.
It is more cost effective.
Yes. And to build a chlorine contact tank and to put in both chemical facilities, and we would be adding just more chemicals. In this particular case, UV light disinfection was a better way to go.
And this is in the speedies permit. This is part of the speedies permit?
The state DEC is changing all of our permits. Yonkers already dechlorinates Ossining, we've already advanced bonding for that plant. And we also have, with our Mamaroneck, New Rochelle. New Rochelle is getting UV light disinfection system. Mamaroneck, because of their long outfall, didn't need to have any changes. But all the plants are being changed, and their chlorine residual allowed in the effluent is being lowered from about 2 parts per million down to 0.5 parts per million or lower.
So eventually, all of our 7 plants won't go this way. Okay, members, any questions? Mr. Williams.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this item also came through these items came through the Capital Projects Subcommittee. One of the concerns, so the only thing that I want to raise, question I want to raise here, and this is a general statement in connection with not only this capital project, but most of those that this committee, as well as the Public Works Committee, will be seeing. We have, in the beginning of the year, requested that the Department of Public Works and the departments that actually are spending significant county money in capital projects to report to us on job creation in Westchester, meaning that that we had asked as a subcommittee that the departments make an effort to ensure that Westchester's residents are being hired within the bounds of the law, obviously. Our Westchester residents are being employed to create jobs within the county with respect to the spending of these significant amount of tax dollars that are being spent on major projects within the county. I've asked the Department of Public Works to provide a report to the subcommittee as well as to all of the legislators on the progress of this. And when I say the progress of this, it doesn't mean just on an FTE basis, in that right now what happens is that when the county spends money, we have an equivalent of what jobs are created. But that equivalent does not necessarily translate into actual jobs being created. So I've asked that we need to have a more focused report on actual jobs that are created. And it should be tracked to the money that we're spending for all of these projects. So I know that the commissioner, as well as the Commissioner of Public Works, have been doing that. They sent up, I think, a report in last month. And we're going to be getting reports, so I would just ask legislators to look at it so that we have a sense that we are doing something with this spending to kind of generate some job creation in Westchester.
Okay. So, well, just on that, it's a little bit, is the focus in Westchester?
I mean, yes.
Fine, this UV equipment may be coming from Texas or something, so that...
Right, but I know that this is not only... Yeah,
this is Westchester jobs.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Given that you might not be able to purchase material, you might be able to purchase material and equipment here as possible. If we can, then we should try to do that. If it is labor, then we need to see where the labor spending is going, whether or not we can track the labor spending to Westchester residents or to Westchester. You know, I know that there are obstacles, but we should aspire to ensure that we are generating jobs. Suffolk County is doing a great, they're doing well at this. I have gone on their website, I've gotten their material, I've spoken to people there. They're focused on making sure that within their county, that their capital spending is creating jobs there. I think that we ought to be looking to do the same thing here in Westchester.
Okay, good. Anything else on this? This item? Has interest rates changed since we authorized? I assume they're still coming down. Hopefully, we're going to get a good bang for our buck. Any other questions on this? What was that item? 3302. Thank you. 3302. Any other questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion for 3302.
So moved.
Second. Legislator Myers, second by Legislator Spreckman. Any other comments? All in favor for budget? Okay.
Aye.
I guess it's a
little motion for Public Works.
So moved.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
All right, so 3302 is passed by both committees. Next for the commissioners, 3047. also at Peekskill.
This is a request for the Peekskill wastewater treatment plant for bonding in the amount of $1.6 million for the design of improvements to the Peekskill plant. It's a phased project. There are two phases. The first phase is to replace the roofs, the floating covers on the two anaerobic digesters. The digester roof covers are about 35 years old. They've reached the end of their useful life, and they need replacement. The second phase would be to look at the boilers, heat exchangers, some aeration piping underground, and some ancillary items, but it's basically done in two phases. When we emptied the digester the last time, we found pieces of metal from the under the truss work underneath the roof. So there is deterioration there that needs to be taken care of. We looked at just repairing the cover, but the cost of the repairs was almost the same cost as replacement.
Well, Commissioner, I have a couple of questions. Over the years, we've heard issues regarding odors at the Peekskill plant. There is a statement in the letter from the county executive that these upgrades will help to prevent odors. But it's in the context, I mean, these context of upgrades of sort of the energy efficiencies. Are you looking at this, you know, as part of the upgrades, you know, specifically odor prevention? I mean, is there any equipment going on for the odor prevention, or is it by doing these other upgrades, it's just kind of as a consequence you get odor control?
Well, the design of the covers as they currently exist, it's a floating cover. And a floating cover, just it's circular, and it rides up and down on tracks as the level of the sludge increases or decreases. And it's got a certain travel that it can go. But what happens is the sludge creates a seal around the outer perimeter. So there is sludge exposed to the outside with this type of cover. What we're going to look to do is design a fixed cover on top of this so you won't have that sludge exposed to the outside, to the air. And in that way, it will help prevent odors.
Okay, well, I'm sure I'm not alone. Over the years, we've just gotten these concerns, and on behalf of the legislator from Peekskill is not here, although the administration chief of staff is here, and he could comment on this, but over the years, we've heard this concern, and as long as we're going to be spending money on this, I think we should ask that the administration look as hard as you can to try to accommodate those people up there. So you're saying that is what you are doing?
That's what we're doing, and we're also going to look at the capture of gas.
That was my next question. Yeah. In terms of the digest, today, is the digester gas being used for fuel today, or is it being flared off?
It's being used for heat inside the plant and to heat the sludge inside the digester, which is part of the process.
Okay.
So some of it is being used. We've talked to NYPA previously, and it didn't seem like there was enough gas to make it worthwhile because the payback period is so long. But with this new type of cover, we'll look at it again and see if we can use a micro turbine to generate some electricity.
Well, I take the experience of the Yonkers plant. Hopefully, you've done a lot of research now on, so hopefully, again, that would be helpful. But no gas is being, is any gas being flared today at Peekskill? I mean, I don't know.
When we do have an excess in the summertime, you can flare some gas.
I see. So as part of this process, you will be looking at trying to take advantage of the gas and maybe use the micro turbines.
Yeah.
Okay, well, very good. Any members, any other comments or questions from any of the members?
Just a quick comment. Sure. I want to just echo your comment because I had spoken to Legislative Tester, and he is concerned or was concerned about the whole issue of odors and environmental justice issues with the current Peekskill, and I follow that to some an extent, and I'm glad to see here that it's being looked at.
Okay. Any questions from public boards? Otherwise, I guess we'll entertain a motion for both committees.
Sounds like it.
Seconded.
Budget.
Motion for Public Works.
So moved.
Second. Okay, any questions?
Any comments? All in favor for both committees?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the item 3047 is passed both committees. And finally, Commissioner, the last item the commission is here to talk to us about is 3300. No, that's for planning. So we're
thank you very much.
One item, yeah. And I guess the commission has requested that we receive and file 3303. 3303, he wants to take a look at that, resubmit it. So I'll ask a motion to receive and file 3303 for budget.
Oh, this is Peekskill also.
Peekskill upgrade, electrical upgrade, moved by Legislator Williams. I need a second for budget. I'm just
Second.
File Legislator Speckman. And for, I guess, for Public Works.
I don't see that on our budget.
Okay, so it's received and filed for budget. Thank you.
We have not.
Okay. Thank you, members. All right, so we're done with that. Is Commissioner Burrows here? Or someone from the planning department?
Planning.
Oh, okay. 3300 members.
This is the parking lots and control devices.
Parking lots and control devices.
Capital budget amendment.
Good morning. Patrick Danielli and Anthony Zano from planning.
Let me just say before you start, I know it's sort of an older project now, but I was at the county center last week, and again, going up to that parking lot across the street, and just a terrific, I know it's all done and finished, and we've got some work, but it's really, I remember when we approved it, went through it, but again, it's like a terrific job. I hope the Bronx was a little cleaner now, given all the work that was done there. But
yes, and we'll be cleaner later, too.
It's a great job, though.
Restore the shoreline along the Bronx Road here, too.
And it's a great model for municipalities to go and look at.
Okay, what do you have for us today?
What you have is a capital budget amendment to add a non-county share of $148,000 to capital project EPF03, parking facilities and control devices. What we have is we've received a federal reimbursement from New York State for the construction of a parking lot.
Can I move it?
We'll be back to you for the item.
We can discuss it. Legislator Williams moves the item for budget. I'll take a second from Legislator Jenkins.
I'm sorry we took so long.
We're open to discussion now. Right? Don't go so fast.
Don't go.
Wait.
We just moved it. We didn't vote on it yet.
Okay. Now, for the other committee that's meeting here this morning, we'll take, before we get into discussion, is there a motion on this capital budget amendment?
I wouldn't mind hearing the presentation, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is, the way this works, if we get a motion, a second, we go into discussion.
Move, Mr. Chairman.
We have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Okay. Item, we're going to discuss this, and if the members are so inclined, they can either vote it up or vote it down.
The project will take place in the village of Hastings, near the Yonkers border. Should be just down in this area here, along Route 9A and the Salmon River Parkway and the South County Trailway. What is we receive a federal reimbursement from the state for the construction of a parking lot and pathway to the South County Trailway. What you have here, this is Sawmill Parkway, north is this way, this is Route 9A, Mount Hope Cemetery. This is the Ravensdale Avenue Bridge coming over the Sawmill Parkway and the South County Trailway running north and south over here. If you may be aware that there is a parking lot now at the entrance ramp at Farragut Avenue, just south of Ravensdale Avenue, for use of the South County Trailway. If you've ever gone by there on a weekend, you'll see that people are parked all along the entrance ramp because the parking lot is overflowing. To relieve this unsafe condition, we propose to construct a parking lot north of Ravensdale Avenue, and the Village of Hastings also was interested in doing that too, and providing pedestrian access from the village to the South County Trail, because right now, when you cross over Ravensdale Avenue, there's no way to get down to the South County Trail. You either have to go all the way south to the parking lot and get access down there. This way you'll be able to walk across Ravensdale Ave. There'll be a pathway along 9A that we'll create into a parking lot. From the parking lot, there'll be a pathway over to the South County Trail. So that's basically the project. It will be to construct this parking lot, the pathway here, and the pathway down here to Ravensdale Ave.
Questions?
Is it non-county share money? Mr. Chairman,
yes,
is it non-county?
The total project cost is estimated around $200,000, so it'll be about $50,000 will be county expenses. And there'll be an IMA with the village, and as part of that IMA, the village agrees to take responsibility for the operation and maintenance of the parking lot, patrol of the parking lot.
How about the walkway?
Along here, they will be. This park will probably end up being part of the South County Trail Maintenance.
This is not our property.
This is the state's property. This used to be county property years ago, but this is now the state property as part of the Sawmill Park.
Well, the obvious question to me, I'm not terribly familiar with that location. Why that far north? Why not? What's the is it topography? Is it property ownership? What's the issue? Why there?
This is the site of the old Mount Hope train station on the Putnam Division. And there is a footbridge.
Well, there's actually a bridge.
There's a bridge over the sawmill at this point, so it makes it easier access. We don't have to construct another bridge to get
I see, but if you, so there's no particular reason why it couldn't be further south. You wouldn't have to build the walk up. Are you saying the bridge over would be a bigger price? So you're tying into the bridge.
It would be more costly to build a bridge over.
Even though it's further north of it. Okay, let's say more.
Thank you, Chairman. A quick question with regards to the parking spots. Can you tell me how many new spots are going to be created?
About a dozen.
About a dozen?
Yes. We're limited because we don't want to be clearing. The grant was for a certain number of spaces, so we're going to try to do as many as we can. Mm-hmm.
We're trying to locate parking all along the South County Trailway, so it is all in one location.
Okay. Using pervious concrete?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, I think we're just going to go with the gravel.
One
parking space accessible. It'll be paved, and this pathway will be paved. Just keeping the as cost efficient as we can.
Lighting, is this daytime, this night?
We close at dusk.
All right. Mr. Bolam.
According to what I've been told here, you're just this piece of capital budget that is just to reflect state aid. Or is this a new project?
No, it's just to reflect the state aid.
Then why do you increase the ultimate cost of the project if it's just to reflect the state aid?
Okay, so, well, it's to cover the additional cost, well, the additional money that's coming in. I mean, we could have done it that way, but we decided to add the non-county share to the cost of the project. As far as I understand, there's $200,000 in cash in that capital project right now. We'll be using $50,000 of that cash
so
for
already
it.
In there.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, the point is, members, the act increases the total project from $3 million to $3,148,000. So that's why
the net is.
So the total project goes. So this $148,000 is coming in. I think what Mr. Boland is saying is someone saving? Are we getting savings of $148,000?
No.
So the total project is up $148,000. That's the point he's making, I believe.
No, the project is centered. I think my understanding of it is that the net cost is the same. The net amount of the county that the county is funding is the same. The difference is the project has been improved by this park, but the improvements are being paid for.
So the project initially did not envision this little park.
Right,
that may be the point. So
right,
the,
exactly.
So this is Mr. Boland's point. This is a
it
new.
Is a, right.
Piece of the, of
it,
the
it is a new piece okay. of it, right. But I think that what they're saying is that it's being funded by another source other than County Trail.
Is everybody with us? Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Any other comments? Any comments from public votes?
No, just in going with the amended act. Builds on a base of what was it, $3 million?
Right, so it goes up to $3,148,000.
So we're out of necessity now. We're going to $3,148,000. So any questions, Public Works members? Any questions from anyone?
We already have, I guess we already have motions on the table for both committees. Yep. So the questions, all in favor for both committees?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the item passes on both committees. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks.
There are no other items that are on the agenda this morning to be acted on jointly by Public Works and Budget. So at this time, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn the Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, this meeting today is adjourned. I just remind the committee that we are meeting again at 4 o'clock. That'll be us standing alone to take up the 4 o'clock agenda.
Okay, Budget, we still have a couple of important items.
I'll be here. I've got to be here on legislation.
Is Commissioner Hsu here?
No, they didn't do that last.
Okay, so we have the second quarter forecast. We have a director of
Larry Solon,
Anne Marie Berg, Finance. The Budget and Finance, both of you like to come up? Anne Marie, all look very happy. We welcome you all to the table.
What time is legislation today?
1:30.
We'll see you then.
Okay, boss.
I'm sorry.
That's it. He's the boss.
I know how that is. I did that twice last year.
I have a small world story for you. My daughter, as your ex-wife, as a teacher.
Get out of here.
Dante Middle School.
Again. Really?
Yeah.
How'd you know she was my ex?
Good morning, everybody.
She's my wife's husband. Yeah.
Good morning. Yeah. Okay, we have our the budget director, the commissioner of finance, here this morning with their colleagues.
Good.
I guess maybe just for the record, everybody at the table, introduce yourselves.
Congratulations.
And
thank you.
Starting with Mr. Delaney.
John Delaney, deputy budget director. Sergio Senti, deputy commissioner.
Anne Marie Berg, commissioner of finance.
Larry Soule, budget director.
Daniel Kelly, deputy finance.
Welcome. I guess you are here to discuss our second quarter forecasts.
We asked them to come back after we had a presentation.
We had a presentation
from them on the 30th. We actually asked them to come back because we had their document from the Journal News where the commissioners and director have some ideas or issues in here. So we need some clarification on some of those points. That's why we asked them to come back.
Okay. Well, I don't know if they have the questions or Mr. Chairman, if you want, they're prepared. Are you prepared to make a presentation on?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right. Because the questions are a few different things. I mean, the first question I would ask them, you know, from a record perspective. I mean, did you all write this? I mean, did two of you write this thing, or did you just have your name put on it?
No, we assisted in writing.
Okay, that's fine. Because some of the things that are in this particular document look are inconsistent with your testimony that you have here. One of the questions you raised in this document was a question on the $8 million of surplus or forecasted contingencies, and that came directly from your testimony regarding mortgage tax certiorari. That number is directly from your second quarter report. Is there something that you are asserting that's different than that number?
I don't think in my presentation that I ever referred to it as a forecasted contingency. We did increase the forecast for tax certs because that's, we believe it's, at year to date, it's already at $9 million. It was budgeted at $9 million. So clearly it's going to come in higher than what was budgeted.
Okay. I mean, because that was actually a question. We will absolutely provide you a copy of the audio tape, which is available online as well. So people can have that information.
Okay, just on that point, make sure the members understand. It's my understanding that the forecast for the certs line is a total of $18 million. Is that the number you're
correct.
Working
that's
on?
That's what we had in our second quarter forecast.
So you had $18 million. The budget was 9.4.
Correct.
Your budget was, so there's a shortfall of 8.6. And I guess the question is, assuming as we move forward and those numbers look like that's It's going to be somewhere in that area.
In which area?
Well, this, the 8.6 shortfall. Yes. I mean, we're only into October. Right. It may or may not come down.
It could be a less. It could, you know.
That actually was a question. That
okay,
was
so that's the question. Where is that money? Where do you anticipate that money coming from? Some kind of transfer or a,
No. The question, Mr. Chairman, thank you, sure. It was the detail behind it. What we asked at the table was to have the backup documentation to understand the rationale for putting aside that amount of additional money, given that we had budgeted $9 million initially, to say that we are going to have in contingency because things are, you know, are in a certain trend. I mean, it's not that it's not being conservative. It may be the right thing to do. Sure. We just asked for the detail and backup to support that additional $8 million of being held, because if not, that portions of that money would fall into the bucket of a surplus, right? So that is basically held surplus, if you will. So that was
what's the plan? The answer?
First of all, I don't agree with the characterization as surplus. We're already at $9 million through the end of August in terms of tax certiorari. So, and the budget was 9.4, so clearly we'd have to have zero tax certs for the rest of the year to come in the budget, which isn't going to happen. Could we come in lower than 18? Sure, we could. But my forecast was for a $22 million savings versus budget, which included the additional $8 million for tax certs, roughly $8, $9 million. So, to call it another $8 million on top of the $22 as savings, I don't think that's the right way to characterize it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we should do is we should take out the document, because we actually went through that. And again, that was your testimony here, that $8 million was in addition. The $22 million does not, your $22 million surplus does not include that $8
million. No, it does include the $8. It includes the additional $8 million in terms of the tax service.
So it would have been 30. You took off the 8 for the additional tax service. So now you're netting on 20.
Right. We're saying the same thing. As opposed to saying that it was $22 million less $8 million. So it was $30 million.
30.
$22 million plus 8 is 30, even in the southern part of Westchester County. Right? So, okay.
Our whole forecast has pluses and minuses. The whole
absolutely, that's the point.
Well, so the 22 is a net of all those pluses and minuses.
Understood. Right. So that was the first thing. The second thing is that we have an assertion in here that we have a $60 million taken as a one shot from our rainy day fund and do you know what the what fund balance did we transfer in 2008 and 2007? How much was the fund balance we transferred?
I don't know, 2007, 2008, I think you had budgeted, $51 million. Off the top of my head, I don't know. I know in 2008, most all of that fund balance was returned, that was appropriated, was returned.
We usually return it.
2.3 million.
The point I'm making, Mr. Chairman, is that to make an assertion, to make it sound like, you know, we're using a rainy day fund, when in 2007 we used $51 million, in 2008 we used $51 million of fund balance. Those are the surplus dollars that we have available, and our accountant has asserted that those dollars would be available for use in the following year as surplus, not as we have done in the past, which is basically you roll them over 2 years later. But those dollars would be available now for utilization in the 2011 budget. And if we went straight line across that for 2007 was 51, 065, 175, in 2008, 51, 520, and then in 2009, 67, 66, 882. So if we're gonna make an assertion, you know, that we're using rainy day funds, the fact of the matter is that doesn't look, you know, it's not $67 million. This is a mischaracterization on how we've done this through a budget perspective.
I wholeheartedly disagree with that.
Okay, tell us why.
Respectfully.
Okay, sure.
I mean, I think that even if you assume the $30 million as a surplus, say tax certs, say, you know, stay at 9 and they don't come in the $8 million higher, okay? So that's $30 million. You're not going to return the full $67 million. Okay, which I know historically has been the past, but if you look at how much has been appropriated, $67 million is clearly higher than 51. So there's a trend here. If you look at the CAFR, which I know Anne Marie is going to speak to, you see that the fund balance has declined by almost $21 million, our unreserved fund balance. So to me, there's a trend here. And this isn't a trend unique to Westchester. This is the entire country, if not the world. People are, you know, it's been raining for a long time. but you can't continue to draw down your fund balance. It's not sustainable. So in my mind, you're not, if say the 30 is holds true, you're still going to use $37 million of your fund balance. It's not going to be returned, meaning in 2011, you'll have a lower fund balance at the beginning of the year. And my point is that, say someone who loses their job, someone who has a cut in salary, doesn't get a bonus or whatever, and they're living off of that level of income, and it's cut, you have to change the structure of your spending. And, typically you start drawing down your savings, whether it's your 401k, whatever, until, hopefully you
things get better.
Things get better.
Right.
Now, the point, going to that point, we're not only in a cyclical deficit, but a structural deficit, because structural deficit is when, you're recovering, you're at your full potential economically, and your expenditures are still exceeding your revenues. So therefore, where we are right now is not sustainable. There has to be structural changes, and I think that's the point of, we can't continue to draw down savings. And I know in the past, going back to 2007, that was clearly pre-recession, in 2008, when things started to get bad, we were able to return that fund balance, but I don't project that pattern to be able to be sustained unless we have some sort of structural reforms.
And that's actually a great point, because we established that through policy, right? That through the board, through the recommendations of
correct.
The county executive, and through good work of you all, you will make suggestions to us that we would enact in policy to help to get us in a different direction.
I view my job is to make recommendations that ensure that our ongoing resources match our ongoing expenditures. I view that as one of my primary responsibilities.
And we do too. And we think that, again, we were looking at this as a positive development as opposed to a negative development. And I think that basically would you think something?
I completely agree with that. I mean, it certainly is a positive development to have, an improvement versus budget. Absolutely.
The other point again.
Before you leave that point, I just have a couple of questions.
Let's say words.
I think that a lot of this, and I'm speaking from someone who I came from a financial background, and a lot of this is terminology that is used, and I think in the political arena, politicians use terminology that suits politicians. That's acceptable. I think our financial experts and our financial professionals, we would like not to necessarily adopt the political jargon, but speak to the industry terms that are usually spoken to, because these terms, rainy day fund, I can tell you, and I haven't heard that used in a financial accounting context among the financial professionals. They use surplus, they use forecast, and they talk about financial terms that are defined within the jargon of financial presentations. And these are financial presentations. So I think that's one of the things we've got to really kind of get there, because credibility is based on how you speak to issues. And I think the residents of Westchester would want to get a clear sense of where we are. And if it is that we have a political discord, it would be good to have our professionals speaking one way or another. The results doesn't matter. The terminology is important, and that terminology should be based on what the industry, the professionals in the financial industry, how they speak, their speech, rather than political speech. That's one point I want to make. One question that the budget director mentioned. You said that we are in a structural deficit, okay? And my understanding of what a structural deficit means is that you are substantially changing. In other words, if you have a pattern of fulfilling your budgetary requirements by using surplus over a period of time to cover the next year, in that using fund balance, let me use the right term, fund balance, or undesignated fund balance to cover your budget for the next year, then, and that's what we've been doing, the pattern has been there. The question, in terms of how we've accounted, the question is now how much, as opposed to how we do it. In the past, I think we have used on average between $50, $51 million. And now we're using 67, I think, based on what you're projecting. And you're looking at the 16 difference as a structural deficit, which means to me that from a standpoint of what that term means, it means that you will not, given everything, if you freeze everything, you will not come back from that 60. In that, that is a permanent condition of which the either an entity or a government is in, that absent doing anything, you will not be able to fulfill that hole, that 60 that you just mentioned, that structurally changed your financial condition. Now, and if I, that's my understanding using that term. Now, and you see, and you also said you didn't see that coming back. Now, is that based on economic circumstances today? Or is that based on any kind of empirical data that you have that would inform us that we will not, that this is a structural deficit? And I'm using that term in the means of the financial, from a financial standpoint. Is there anything that you can point to us as to exactly demonstrate that we will not come back if we do absolutely nothing? I'm not saying we shouldn't do anything. My point is the terminology, that if we do absolutely nothing, sales tax will never come back. Other revenue sources that we have had that allowed us to use only $51 million will never come back in order to get us back there. Is there any economic data that you can point to?
If you look back historically at sales tax growth, you know, even if, say, sales tax grew, say, at 10%, okay, what is that going to be for the county share? That's going to be $30 million, okay? I don't see that happening next year. Could it happen? Sure. Look at what our revenue sources are. Okay, state federal aid makes up, I don't know what it is, about 26%. It depends, but if, you know, I'm not seeing that we're going to look at state aid going up anytime soon or federal aid, especially when the state's facing a $13 million shortfall. So, I mean, is that a subjective opinion? Yes, that's my opinion. Could I be wrong? Sure. Look at sales tax. Okay, a 1% increase in sales tax equals about $3 million for the county. So I don't see that solving our structural problem. When we have expenditures like pension going up 36%, we know what our rate is next year. We have healthcare costs going up anywhere from 5 to 8%. And we have salary increases. And we have Medicaid going up by $6 million, which is, you know, our cap. So I don't see any of our revenue sources that are growing at the same rate as our expenditures. We had a major decline in recession. You've never actually seen consumer demand go down to the point where it did. And to climb out of that, you have to have a tremendous growth in sales tax to make up for that difference. Even, you know, I'd be surprised, and again, this is my opinion, so it is subjective, but it is based on empirical numbers, as you suggest. And we can certainly go back and look historically at the sales tax when we've come out of recession, look at it, you know, and this isn't a normal recovery either. We're not recovering at the same rate. So in my opinion, you know, I don't have a graphic, but if you have your expenditures growing like this and your revenues growing like that, those two lines never meet unless you bring your expenses down. So that's and again, is there some subjectivity or opinion in there? Yes, of course.
I understood the number. Just want to make a quick point. I don't want to dispute your current state of the financial situation. I just wanted to make sure that I understand that structural deficit suggests a long-term condition of an organization. And I just wanted to make sure that I understand that that's what we're in.
Just to get the terminology,
yes.
As you alluded to before, a structural deficit is when you use fund balance. Because your expenditures and your revenue should match. If they do not, there's a structural deficit, which is not a bad issue because we have fund balance. It's a very typical issue in the county and all municipalities to use fund balance. But any time you use fund balance, it's considered a structural deficit. Is it an understandable deficit? Absolutely, because that's why we have fund balance. But if you want to go back to terminology, you're in a structural deficit by use of the fund balance.
You know, the thing is, you can't rely on sales tax. I think when I first joined the budget, like 2004, Nick DeSantis came here and he said, you cannot rely on sales tax to balance, you know, that growth to balance, you know, all your programs. You either have to cut your programs or you have to do raise taxes. And I think you raise taxes 18 point something percent, property taxes, you had the 0.5% increase in the sales tax, and you had the mortgage tax, which brought us in $40 million, I think, in 2005. And that's what you've been living off of. But we're at the point where you would have to do a major increase in property taxes, either this year, either in 2011 or 2012. That's where we're at. Sales tax isn't going to do it. And especially, you know, sales tax came in 10% down. We lost like $50 million. You know, we used up we didn't return $21 million in 2009. We're probably not going to return maybe $37 million. We don't have hundreds of millions of fund balance. It's coming down. It's going to get worse. We can't, even if we get through 2011, we have cut programs or raise taxes.
But just on that point, Mr. Chairman, the reality is that like when we talk about state budgets, et cetera, we are creatures of the state, you know, for that those kind of programs, et cetera. So when their funding goes down, the program goes down accordingly, right? So our expense goes down as well. Unless we make a choice here at this table to maintain a program.
The state just hit us for another 1.1, what was it? I sent the memo around to you guys.
On reimbursements,
they're cutting our reimbursement by 1%.
On reimbursements, on reimbursements, we still do probation. They keep cutting down, and we keep paying. So that's not.
There's two different problems that we're talking about, right? There's problems that we're talking about around the table that we control, right? That's one set of problems that we control. There's another set of problems that, whether they are reimbursement rates that aren't given to us, whether it's for probation, whether it's for early childhood intervention, whether it's for the Parkway Police that we are paying for, even though we get some money from it, it's not covering the cost. The reality is that there's a lot of moving parts to that puzzle, right? And to try to even simplify it for the normal person to understand it, it's really doing a disservice to all the things that everyone's trying to do together to address some of the issues, whether it's from a personnel perspective, whether it's from a revenue generation perspective, or from reimbursement perspective.
Right.
So the point of this conversation is that, you know, that when we have good news, we should try to actually act like it's good news, right, for a change, and say that we are continuing to work on the long-term issues in a way that makes some sense, as opposed to having, a particular document come out to try to, again, get back into the place where we're not getting from our professionals. You all are the professionals, right? Professional information, not information tilted or slanted or twisted. Straight up, whatever it is, it comes down the middle, whatever way it is. Now, the data is the data, and we work together to deal with that. And we certainly respect the recommendations that you all make around the table to us as we take them into consideration. But some of the things that we're talking about from the second quarter, we're in a good position from a directional for 2010, right? Are we short compared to, you know, what we'd like to be at? Probably, right? You know, from the long term, from things that have happened in the past. But as Commissioner Berg stated clearly, not only are we not in the worst position of all the municipalities, other county governments, et cetera, we are in the top tier of being in the better position, right? So, and that would be factual, right? That would be going back to the data. We estimated sales tax data at 4.4%, if I remember right, and from your presentation, Director, then you said it's coming in at 7.6, 7.8 or something like that, right? So that's what it's coming in at. So it's coming in at a rate that's almost double, not really double, but almost double what we anticipated because we were conservative in our approach in thinking exactly of what our accountant said. So again, I just want us to be clear on this stuff that the members of this board, when we're making decisions on budgetary issues, whether it was for 2010 or going forward in 2011, when the county executive presents his item, that we understand clearly that we are understanding what the current market is and the real world is, and we keep making adjustments to that. And we want to make sure that we understand that we were very conservative in this around this table that when we did this stuff last year, and I suspect we'll be conservative again.
Let me... legislative, but I'm not sure how concerned we were in certain areas. Legislator Harkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Getting back to the point of sales tax that Legislator Jenkins and Legislator Williams were talking about, I was at Mr. Gottlieb's presentation at the Gateway Center the other day. The figure he used was sales tax was up 13%. So is that figure accurate? Well, that's what he said.
That's what he said. I don't know what period of time he was using, but if I, year to date, now we have August collections, it's up 7.1% because August growth rate has started to tail off. But, so it's about 7.1% year to date through the end of August.
All right. I think the administration should speak with one number and one voice. Can we verify the figure he used versus the figures you're using? Let's see where we are.
Must have been 1 month or something.
Yeah, I don't know the period of time.
It could have been a monthly figure. It could have been a monthly figure compared to last year. But I think, clearly we know sales taxes is not going to be where it was, during the boom years. But I think it's important for us to be able, just from a planning perspective, to see where we are. And I'm very interested to hear what our auditors will say in terms of their forecasts versus the forecasts we come up with at this table.
Sure.
Thanks.
And I think the thing with the sales taxes, it's up the worst year ever. I mean, it was horrible. 2009 was horrible. It came in 10.3% last, I think. So, you go here, then you go up here, and it's like, oh, yep, 7%.
I expect as we get closer to the budget season, we get into projections. I expect within the month or so, we'll be getting the administration's budget. We'll have their forecast for next year. In order for us to do our work, we certainly appreciate any information, and the sooner the better we get from the administration in terms of forecasting.
Can you ask them when?
Will we get a
when the budget? Well, the budget. I mean, it's gonna. I mean, it's due.
No, ask them.
Yeah. Well, it'll come. So, anybody have any idea when the budget's coming out?
Before November 15th.
Okay. Thank you.
4 minutes.
What'd you say? How much before?
It's
midnight.
Let me ask a specific question, if you can. Mm-hmm. Again, coming back to tax arrears, because it's such a big number. Again, we weren't, I guess, conservative enough last year. If we could miss the number by as much as it looks like, have you identified at this point where you would be coming, where you're taking the money out of? Because I guess you come back for a budget transfer at some point. If it's $6-8 million, you're going to have to, I assume, transfer money to one. And when would you be coming, and have you identified a pot of money?
Yeah, I mean, we have to see where the number ends up at the year end, but obviously we just did the budget transfers. I mean, typically, we deliver it earlier in the following year that we do the budget transfers. We have to see where all the accounts close out. But, there's a number of places. If sales tax is up, obviously, potentially we can.
The municipal. We have to take
some
appropriations.
Yeah. So there's a number we have to see where the year.
Sales taxes up at the end of the year, there'll be a surplus in that account.
Well, I guess we have to do it from an expense.
You have to do it from an expense. Right.
Right. Right. Right. We wouldn't, exactly. The distribution is how. Right. We have to see it year end.
Okay.
The thing about that is we're at 9.2 million. With 7 months in. We have 5 to go. And in the past, we've seen as much as 50% of the. Should come in, in the last 5 months. So,
yeah,
we could see 18, but we don't know. It's just
that is exactly right, and I can tell you because coming from a municipality that actually look at sales tax. We used to look at sales tax in our budget every month. There is clearly a trend that you can look at. Now, the trend, if you look at the graph, and you're saying the graph might be this way, meaning that year end, it kind of. Get higher. You might say, well, okay, it's not going all the peaking that much, but it's in the same trend. It's not, you're going to see a greater amount of sales tax later on in the year than you probably have now. And that's not only here in the county, it's all the municipalities that depend significantly, especially those that actually have their own sales tax rate. I know when I was in my emergency council on the budget committee, that's something that we
I do have one specific question. You may or may not have the answer in the proposed, I guess, deletions. Last year, we closed a shelter. There was a safety net closing shelter. We identified $561,000 of, I guess, savings. Has that turn out to be true? Is that a weird deal? Have we actually gotten that $561,000 in savings?
I mean, that's the projection for the end of the year. If that does close, you know, that's a under contract, and therefore, you know, I mean, that's a projection.
So, so the contract ends, it should be what the number is.
Correct.
I see. I guess the NSS could tell us where they are in that.
Yeah, I mean, they can be more specific in terms of.
Yeah, have they closed?
Is the shelter closed at this point? You know,
authority for it. You know, I don't know the answer to that. It's specifically closed. Maybe,
yeah,
John, maybe
hope,
John knows the answer.
I have to go back. There's Hope, and we had emergency housing units, and we were able to close that and transfer to another valve and save money. There was a valve, and I can't remember.
I guess we can find it at the end, because basically on contract, it's either closed or it's not closed, or we're either paying for it
right,
or not.
Right,
paying
right,
for it.
We should know that.
The savings we have is based on, you know, what they closed.
All right, well, I guess
we should
follow up with the SS then, I guess, to
Well, they should have it.
Well, they don't know today.
We can get back to you.
Yeah, okay, well, I expect the administration to respond to whoever has the information in the administration.
Shelter closing is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Well,
it's not like a small little thing.
$560,000 on the money side, and on the substantive side,
which
our committee on community services want to know.
Which one are we talking about?
What's going on?
Which shelter are we talking about?
Well, I don't know. I assume our community services committee is something that's looking at that. I don't know,
Commissioner Mann said they were considering, at least back then, they were considering closing a shelter. They had, as of the last time he spoke to us, they had not pulled the trigger on it for the fear that once you close a shelter, you're never opening it up again. And you know, while our shelter population has been trending downward over the years because of things like the child care scholarships and job training and the eviction prevention and foreclosure prevention work that we've been doing as a package, we're still in the grips of a recession. So his last testimony to the board was that they had not pulled the trigger on closing that, but you know, that may have changed, and you know, we just need to be brought
because
up to
based
date.
On the information we had last year, we did, and when we adopted our budget, we did delete this $560,000 on the assumption that there was going to be a closing.
Right.
Some savings, right? That's my understanding.
We looked at something with PEC.
So if it didn't happen, those are savings that will not.
I mean, what's happened is they've used supplemental rent, where they pay people who are not homeless double their rent, call it double the rent, so that they don't become homeless. So even though it's more expensive on compared to a regular not homeless case, they don't become homeless, which is like $5,500 a month.
She's house. I mean, I don't want to take the time today. Yeah. That's true.
That's what we've done, and we have excess capacity in homeless shelters, and we finally decided to pull the trigger and start looking.
John, that's a point I'd like to pursue, maybe not today, though, but that's something over the year. How do you double rents? I thought we were all controlled. How do we were able, I mean, it's great if we're able to do it.
We're able to do family assistance, safety net. Family assistance, I think, is open-ended, safety net, I believe, they have 2 years.
Oh, so this is out of the emergency, so we could just, because I know we used to pay $3,000 for a motel. So this is like the emergency money that you could just pay whatever?
No,
still
I just really play double the rent, doesn't include everything, but it allows us to not have them go to more expensive homeless, and we've had, therefore, excess capacity homeless shelters, and that's what they're looking at.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll need to follow up. Maybe Alfredo's community services can follow up on the substance of what shelters are in play or whatever. I'm not on that committee. Okay, any other questions from anybody else on the committee for... our guests as to we're obviously just finished the third quarter Friday, so I guess at some point it'll be what is it, a matter of weeks or next month? When do you kind of get a better picture of the third quarter?
Next month, yeah.
Okay,
probably in conjunction with the budget.
Coming out with the budget, right?
Yeah.
Any other questions from anybody? If not, I guess we have. And we'll say thank you very much. We appreciate the update, and we'll be seeing you soon. Okay. Thank you very much. We still have another item on the agenda. If I can find it. And we have a Commissioner O'Stanley here. Is it
that one there? I've never seen him before. He looks like
him. A couple of issues came up. We asked for... questions from human resources on transition of personnel at the medical center. And from Commissioner Hsu on the cost of fuel for next year and the impact on NK but fare increases. But neither party is here. Sally reports that they're coming. So we will stand in place for 30 seconds and wait for our
talk luggage.
Talk luggage.
I thought it was in Valhalla. Wasn't it the Valhalla shelter?
But even if they
even the one at the airport?
No, there's none at the airport anymore.
I'm sorry, not that the, on the campus, the volunteer somewhere.
Hmm?
Well,
and on behalf of community services, Marty. Marty! On behalf of community services, I would like to inform you that the chair, Williams, has requested numerous times for the new commissioner to come forward and discuss, and we have been denied. So it is not the committee's fault.
Well, how did that occur? I mean, I
how do
haven't
we
heard
get
that. Why is that? I mean, that over the course of the month, that's the first I've heard that. I mean, what's going on? I mean, I don't understand that. Just been denied?
Yep. So what is, he's not, he wasn't ready.
Well, can someone else come in then? It's not the new commissioner? Because they didn't have a commissioner.
They're
one,
gone.
Yeah. So no one can give the information.
There he is.
Commissioner!
How you doing?
All right. You lost your jacket in the rush.
Commissioner Hsu is here today to talk to us about cost of fuel.
Hey, Bernice. How are you?
The guy's got no staff at all. He had to give up his jacket.
Oh, did they take your jacket away from you?
Come up with facts.
Can't afford the dry, cleanings.
Come up with facts. It's like they take you, right?
We are looking at the Liberty fuel usage estimates.
No, these are not estimates. These are locked-in contracts, baby.
Contracts.
We don't fool around. We've locked in these contracts. Come on, Marty.
Usage estimates.
I was paying $287.
I know last year we locked in a contract. We guessed wrong, but that was last year.
That was last year. Keep doing it.
You got it right. Like 4 years
in a row. The good news is you always get another chance.
Yeah.
The contract expires, you get another chance. Now, these are expiration dates on these contracts, or starting dates?
No, starting dates.
Starting dates.
Yes, what I had Liberty do was, given the fact that we've had experienced really good crude oil prices in the summer, my instructions to them were to lock in any time they're close to $2.58 per gallon. Okay? So what they were able to do was they were looking at the spot market, and the spot market is 42,000 gallons per contract. So as of July, they've locked in almost 750,000 gallons at 258. I had them lock in a second one at 253 for another 840,000 gallons. A third contract was locked in on August 18th for 714,000 gallons at 259. The last one we locked in was end of August at 256. We still have approximately 360 gallons left over from the 2010 contract, which runs for 12 months. We intend to draw that down in January of 11, all right? So in essence, what I've done is I've locked in basically our entire fuel needs for next year at 256 average.
So these are 12-month, each one of
these
is 12-month
contracts? These are all 12-month contracts from the date that you actually enter into the contract. So what we'll do is we'll use them as they begin to expire, okay? So last year, the second sheet that Sally's given to you actually tells you the number of we use about 3 million gallons a year. We have experienced a decrease in usage because of the hybrid buses. The hybrid buses get us about 2 miles per gallon additional. Doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, you go from 4.5 miles per gallon to like 6, it makes a big difference, especially the hybrids. And we have approximately 80 hybrids in the fleet. So we have experienced a decrease in fuel requirements because of the hybrid operation. So in terms of fuel for next year, in the 2011 operating budget, we've already incorporated these contracts that we've already locked in. In essence, our fuel requirements for next year.
Is it normal, you know, over the course of time, have we gone a certain amount of gallons month by month? Could you lock in 3 million gallons, you know, if you froze all at once? Was that not good
was not good.
That's not good policy.
Yeah, no. Well, what I had Jerry Diamore do was look at the spot market, talk to his brokers, get a trend line as to where they think they were going up and down. As you know, it was fluctuating between 65 and high 70s per barrel.
So the trend is down. You don't want to lock in a lot.
Right.
So
he worked with professional traders, and what we tried to do was lock in where we thought we would get the best prices. Keeping in mind that we hedged a little bit because, as you noticed, if it went down again, we'd be locked in. So we didn't want to lock in all of our eggs in one shot. We locked in where we thought was appropriate. And I think overall did an excellent job. His overall price is less than the $2.58 per gallon that I asked him to come in under. So we're doing really well. You know, bus operations, like the airlines, fuel is our biggest cost in terms of materials. The fact that we've locked in for the next 12 months eliminates that variable. Okay?
Well, it sounds like we should be buying more hybrids. Sounds like it.
The unfortunate thing is, you know, the feds paid for a lot of those. The hybrid buses are running approximately $250,000 more than the regular gasoline buses. So there is a cost issue there. But clearly, you know, the hybrid buses do have utility because they're on the road all day, as opposed to, you know, having limited mileage use.
Well, let me remind myself and the committee members, we provide the buses to Liberty.
We own everything.
We own everything.
Including their shirt. Yeah, so, we own their entire facility. We give them a management fee to run it for us.
So is it possible, given some of the new tax laws that are in place or come in place, where there's a 100% depreciation or tax credits, that is some way, if Liberty, if we could push the purse, Liberty could buy these buses like for nothing, or
no.
From tax point, there's no...
No, the grants from the feds are to the recipient, which would be Westchester County. They're not to a private entity. Mm.
But I'm saying if they can get access to, I'm not sure that some of these laws where everything is like speeded up depreciation.
You can't depreciate when you're a nonprofit, and it's got to come.
I said Liberty bought the bus. Liberty actually bought the bus.
Oh, I see.
Liberty's to operate the service, not
just
that.
So we can't. I'm saying we can't pass on any opportunities because
no.
We also make
all the capital improvements for all the facilities because we own the facility.
Right, and we don't get the benefit of any of these depreciations.
I understand
that.
You can't take federal money and then try to do a tax credit against it. Wouldn't work well.
Yeah, you got to be paying taxes.
Then we have a bigger deficit.
Well, Liberty, let's say if somehow we put that power into Liberty's hands, then they can take advantage of it.
Well, there's issues of, you got to keep in mind that Liberty operates for the county under an operating agreement. We're not going to pass things through because there's issues of franchising rights and.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they make money; they can use the depreciation.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well,
okay.
No.
Legislative Myers.
Yes, I think this is great news. I'm surprised that we haven't heralded this. Frankly, I mean, if just to look at the $5 million in savings on fuel between the 2 years is. It's not a drop in the bucket.
Absolutely.
It's good.
Yes.
I'm surprised this hasn't gone out to. Exactly. It's a percentage of tax levy.
1%.
Yep.
Press release will be out.
Keep it up. No. I have another question, though. About 6 to 8 months ago, we had all of the issues with a number of different bus lines that weren't profitable or were being underwritten too much.
Being subsidized.
Subsidized.
Right.
The one with the X in it. The one 76, there were a number.
Yes.
And we were able to save them and negotiate new deals for some of them. But there had been a statement that we would see an overall review of our bus system in September. Is that ongoing?
Yes.
And it was the previous commissioner who said it.
Right. We have prepared the 2011 proposed operating budget for DOT.
Yeah.
Within that budget, there are accommodations to address deficient routes that require a tremendous amount of subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're reviewing those proposed changes with the administration, which ultimately be submitted to the board for their concurrence and approval. So, yes, to answer your question.
So you've done this analysis.
There are 32 routes that have been analyzed that are on the table, so to speak, for revisions, modifications to service, and or elimination as part of the 2011 budgets. And when the administration ultimately agrees on what we've proposed and submits it to the board will have full review capabilities. I'm sure I'll be appearing. We'll be going over each one of those routes individually.
Okay.
We have prepared a fact sheet for each route, which lists legislative districts, community it runs, demographics. It's almost like a Standard & Poor's fact sheet.
Wow.
With charts.
Good.
Okay. So again, we just submit that to the administration. We're going through a process of administration to review those in terms of its impacts.
We've done Title VI review to make sure that we're not fighting Title VI issues with the federal government. So that is part of our 2011 DOT operating budget submittal.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Can I just clarify, Legislative Myers raised a point. I would make sure to clarify to understand it. 2009 to 2010, price per gallon $3.79 to $2.55. We saved this $5 million.
Yes, we did.
But 2011, we're actually going to spend more money. The average you contract's about $2.56.
So it's a penny more.
So what we did this year, you know, we passed that budget, but this next budget coming up, budget that we'll be voting on, what you've locked in a fuel point of view, there's just making sure there's actually a penny more. So
correct, but the cost per gallon for next year is a known entity. It's incorporated in next year's budget.
Right. Okay. And we're projecting. We're still projecting more miles. Where's the total?
We made 2 million more in the metro.
Keep in mind that with some of our proposed service modifications, the total miles traveled will decrease.
Total miles, so there'll be a savings because we'll be traveling. Our price per gallon is actually up a penny. But there'll be some savings because
we're assuming
the administration and the board adopts changes.
Right, so if we make some changes, there'll be less miles. Okay.
Yes, there'll be less service miles.
Okay, but there won't be any major savings.
Okay, Anne.
So, John, so the total fuel cost for next year is $7.8 million compared to this year that was $8.6 million.
We'll still be down. Right?
So we'll be down, I mean, I would assume part of that is because of the fact that you just said the hybrids are getting better.
Yes.
I mean, it's not a lot, so far.
Not a lot, right. There's a mileage reduction in usage as it is, but
there's
additional changes in the routes, which would further bring that service mile number down.
Okay.
Right, the price per gallon is going up, but there'll be fewer miles driven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in a penny,
A penny is a penny, but it's a lot of miles.
You're picking it up on the other side.
So there could be savings of $800,000 if we adopt it, with apparently all the changes that are going to be made.
Correct. Correct.
Could put that right into childcare.
We may or may not. Right?
Correct. That's yet to be seen.
Okay, so that's it. So there's the 09, 010, and then 2011. The price is $2.56. Okay.
Any questions?
In your 2011 projected utilization, you said that includes whatever route adjustments will be made or proposed?
We've made some assumptions based on where we think the administration and the board is going to go with it.
And that's
so
it.
So we did a judgment. Obviously, that will be subject to modifications as we go through the budget process.
But that's in this 3 million gallon.
It's in the 2011 operating budget submittal that I've submitted to the county executive and the budget director.
Okay. Just the number that's on this page that you handed out, the 3,048,000 gallons.
Yes.
What does that reflect your proposal, including what you've submitted to
we may have excess fuel left over if in fact we don't use it all with the reduction in service miles. These are contracts that we guarantee a price at a certain number. We don't as you notice we're using the 2010 rolls. We're using it in January. If in fact we don't use it, we don't pay for it.
Okay, maybe my question wasn't clear. So you said that there are proposed changes for 2011. I just want to be clear on whether or not this 3 million gallon estimate included those proposed changes or if they do not include those.
I don't think they include it at this point. We left the gallons in because we're not sure where the service cuts or service modifications will go.
Thank you. Just wanted to be clear.
So good, but there'll be less than that if they have some service cuts.
Yeah, but they won't occur till 11.
But the price per gallon is a penny more, then that the whole question
is... We're budgeting the whole amount, not knowing where the budget's going to be, and ultimately it's going to be approved.
The only thing we really know is the price per gallon. We don't know how many miles to project next year. Other questions? Anybody?
I think the other question the board wanted to ask me was the NTA fare increases.
Yes.
Is that a call?
Yes. Okay. Thank you for calling.
If you look at the 2009-2010 comparison, we carry this year, we were going to carry approximately 33 million passengers. Each passenger is considered a one-way route. So if you take a round trip, it's two trips. Okay. Right now, the cash fare is approximately a third. We collect a third of the fares through cash. We carry approximately two-thirds through the MetroCard system. Now, the trend line has been that more people are going to MetroCards and less people are going to cash. We still have, we think, at least a quarter of our riders who will continue to use cash by virtue of cash flow. The MTA proposed fare increase, which they are planning on voting sometime in the middle of October, October 15th or so, we'll have a fare increase. From what we can gather from talking to the MTA people, the 30-day unlimited MetroCard will go up $15 to $104. There will be no cap. They were talking about 90 trips. They're talking limiting the number of trips in the unlimited card. Right now, the way we read it from talking to all of our MTA counterparts, they will go up to $104, which is an increase of $15 from the present $89 fare. The unlimited ride feature will stay the same. You will have unlimited rides. There will be no cap on that number. Now, the monthly MetroCard, they will have variations within that for the 40 trip, the 10 trip. There's a tremendous amount of discounting. Okay, if you notice in this chart, when you actually incorporate all of the various discounting for MetroCard, and again, MetroCard is processed by the MTA on behalf of Westchester. They send us a check. Okay. The average fare that we get from the MetroCard, even though our cash fare is $2.25 per one-way trip, we actually average approximately $1.23 per passenger on the MetroCard. It's a substantial discount from the actual cash fare, which is why you see that most people, if they can afford it, would rather go to the MetroCard. Their actual fare using our buses are actually cheaper. Because of all the discounting, you know, the MetroCard has discounting, the unlimited is discounted, $40 one is right now has an $8 bonus, the 20 trip has a $4 bonus, they have the one day unlimited. I mean, so we recently participated in the MTA's public hearing in Westchester for the proposed fare increase. We participated for one of two reasons. One, the MTA spoke, and we actually spoke right after. It was not a big turnout. We had approximately a dozen speakers. The MTA had approximately a dozen and a half speakers, many of whom were the same speakers. The reason we participated was that in the event that the MTA raises the fare and the county chooses to follow suit, that we, in fact, have satisfied our obligation under the public hearing process. We did not want to go and do the public hearing by ourselves. The MTA has a tremendous public relations department that gets the word out, satisfies all of the custodial issues of advertisement. We actually jumped on board. We did the same thing last time the MTA raised their fares. We did the same thing. We combined our public hearing with theirs right afterwards so that we satisfied our public hearing outreach requirement. I know that in the past people have said we are married to the MetroCard. That's not true. We could set our own fares. We've done so recently with the express bus to Manhattan. We've set the fare at $7.50 with no discount. We've had the MetroCard adjusted where it does not allow transfers, does not take discounts. So when you ride the BXMC down to the city, you're paying the full $7.50. All right. For those that are interested, the express bus. We had calculated the break-even point to be 1,100 passengers a day. During the month of September, the preliminary numbers came in around 950, so we're about 150 shy. But we think there's issues with the Jewish holidays, with the fact that people still come back from vacation, so it's not a good barometer. You had Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur during that month, so we're going to watch the October numbers. As the county executive indicated, we will either continue to adjust the service so that it requires no subsidies, or we'll raise the fare another quarter. We thought 750, we were very comfortable that 750 would be the number. I know that there was discussions during the public hearing process that we'd go to 850. We thought that was too much of a leap. So we will continue to monitor that. The BXMC is in next year's budget, our operating budget, with zero subsidies. So as the county executive indicated, we will adjust the fares or the service so that it's self-sufficient without eliminating the service, which is our commitment to the communities. We've had a lot of inputs, tweakings, and other things to adjust the service. At certain times, there's
standees that we tried to eliminate. So right now we are monitoring that service very closely, just as a point of information.
Is that 950 per day? So is that
750?
So, no, the 950 passengers. Is that
total?
So, but that's two ways. So it's really 475 passengers.
And we had predicted 1,100.
Right. So we're predicting about 550. But again, you know, some
in terms
people.
Of people, I'm sorry, people.
There are people trips. People. All when we say those are all one-way
right.
trips.
So it's 900 trips, but it's 475 people per day.
Some people
Unless
use it one
don't
direction, don't use it the other. So it's not always yeah. Some people go down, take it down, meet with a friend, and drive back. So it's not. Ultimately, we're looking at 1,100 in terms of the one-way trip towards the break even. Right.
Okay. Can you talk to the 76 line?
76 and 77. I know a lot of my employees live up north. They take the 77, so I need at least one bus for them down and one bus back. yes, that's there are 32 routes that we've examined extensively based on ridership and the cost per lane mile to actually provide the service. We sat down with Liberty Lines and with our management operations division. As I said, that's in the operating budget scenario. We actually create a little binder that shows each route with all the statistical information and a fact sheet. So, yes, there are 32 routes that we've examined for service modifications in one form or another.
Olivia has a question.
Okay. I want to go back to the original question of what the impact of the MTA fare increase will be. So you said that they will be voting in mid-October. So if the county opts into the same fare increases as the MTA, what will the impact be?
The last time that the MTA increased fares, our benefit was around $2 million.
And is it a similar increase this time from last time?
As soon as they adopt the actual number, we will do a comparative of how much it increased last time versus how much it's increased this time relative to a percentage basis. As you know, with each fare increase, there is a projected drop in ridership, usually between 1-3%. And we'll see. There are a lot of variables with fare increases. You get more fare, but you also lose some ridership. And again, once the MTA adopts it through their board, we will analyze and compare it based on their last increase and what we derive as a benefit from that.
Can you give the Budget and Appropriations Committee the last fare increase and the proposed fare increase this time?
The proposed fare increase is unofficial. I'm getting it from inside. I'm getting it from our inside sources. So until they pass it, I don't want to start speculating on what they're going to pass.
So that wasn't part of the public hearing?
The public hearing was very generic. The public hearing was discussing and having the public input on what they felt fares would be or should be. It was not on a particular structure. Here's the structure. You comment on the structure. It was, we have a general fare increase. Everybody's been reading about it in the papers. Please state your position or your comments.
Okay.
So it was not a real plan. There was no plan that was on a board that says this is what we're approving. It was to seek input and that the MTA board would go back and analyze the input and compare it to their options, because they had several options that were floating in the papers as to what their fare increases would be. And so, no, there has not, until the board adopts the new fare increase, it's not a fare increase. So,
can you give the committee a copy of what the last fare increase was then? So that we can see what the previous change was.
I can give you what the last fare increase was.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, anybody? Otherwise, we'll let the commissioner go back to work.
Yes. Incidentally, I'm going to answer your question now. I have on the ANC calendar several grants from New York State DOT. They're called job access grants. They are funds from the state for routes that we've added additional service which benefits job creation.
Ooh.
Okay.
Nice.
These are grants that were started in 2009. They run 2 years typically. It's a reimbursement at the completion of a one-year period. So the ANC that you'll see, there's three now, I think there's three more coming. They started in 2009. We actually get reimbursed in 10. And yes, the revenues are incorporated in this year's operating budget. There is no excess revenues that we have not accounted for. We have already added the service in response to the need because of job access to sites. So
free money.
Great. Do you have a total?
No real money then.
It is real money because we've actually added the roots and we actually.
No, it's not extra.
It's not extra. It's I know. I
no, it's one time, but still.
Right, but it's
take any money we can get. Right,
and given the reason, and to answer your question, why the resolution is so late? They're so late because the state couldn't give us an agreement. They actually gave us like a letter, like a verbal. So now the gentleman who actually is administering the program retired, so we asked him before he retired to give us all the. So he is.
Okay.
So that's why we're doing it, all right?
Good.
So there are four specific routes where we've added service in 2009 in response to the demand for access to jobs.
But in theory, 2 years from now, either we're going to have to take those routes away or add money to pay for them.
Those are part of our normal service adjustments we make every year. Two or three times a year to accommodate demand and elsewhere.
If we decide to keep those routes that are funded with this money, another route would have to be shortened.
We would do those changes irrespective because our goal here is to create access for people who need mobility.
Jump an X amount of new dollars came in. These are new dollars starting in 2009. Well, I'm saying, I'm just commenting. You say it's a 2 year program, so 2 years from now, when those dollars no longer come,
if the demand is still there, we'll keep the service and we'll cut somewhere else.
Okay, that's all right.
Okay. So those that are routes that obviously have the demand, so they're...
Right, no, but we have something else we'd have to lose because it's not...
Yeah, assuming we have a budget issue where we would have to
add the money.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Anybody else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The only good news
about today. Yes, Commissioner, good. Okay. And our final item... the Commissioner of Human Resources, Commissioner Orestanos here, thank you for coming. We have an issue about the transition of personnel functions at the medical center, I believe, is the issue before us.
As well as turn the page.
Turn the page.
There's number two and number three.
Okay. Yeah, I guess an update on the county, but I guess maybe we have better numbers now on the...
And vacancies. Right.
Retirement plans and the status of vacancies. So, Commissioner, the floor is yours. Thank you for Commissioner Rosano.
With respect to the medical center, we have received tentative information that legislation creating a separate civil service administration for the medical center will be proposed in January. If such legislation were approved, Westchester County would no longer have any responsibility for administering the provisions of civil service for the medical center. Although we requested a copy of the legislation from the medical center, we have been advised that the legislation is still being drafted and not yet available for our review.
So if I can interpret that, I say today the CSCA at the medical center still falls under your purview to administer?
As civil service falls under my purview to administer. Just to clarify things, the employees were transferred back in 1998 when the medical center did spin off at that time. So they're not our employees. All we do as the county and Department of Human Resources is administer civil service, and that's pursuant to legislation.
So this
exams.
Proposed
exams.
This proposed law would take even is it would take even that function away from you?
I believe so if that's what they are going to propose. That's my understanding. But
we can talk to this. I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit in the Joint Financial Review Committee, and the rationale is that it's a very different test. It's a very different set of personnel requirements for medical-related CSEA versus civil service government-related.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that they may want to do this is, unlike the county, most of the positions at the medical center are non-competitive. I think about 75% of them are non-competitive.
They're very specific.
Meaning they do not have to take exams, and they are, I believe, mainly medical personnel. Mm-hmm. For instance, to become a nurse, you have to have a degree, you have to pass an exam, and you're licensed by the state. So in those instances, they do not feel it's appropriate to have them take another exam on top of that.
And so they're a member of the CSCA, but they join through a non-competitive,
Well, it's not that they don't. It's not that they join them. Well, I guess in a way it is, but it's also it's just a completely different kind of hiring procedure and a different set of skills that's required.
So this proposed legislation, presumably, they would just take, they'd go their way.
I think that's my understanding.
Well, in the Joint Review Committee, they have said to us that they've been working with
HR to do this. So I guess the question is, like, what have they done with you to date to, in fact, move this along?
They haven't really done anything. All we know is that they're proposing legislation. They mentioned this a few months ago. They told us they were considering this. But other than that, I mean, really?
They really wouldn't need you if they just passed legislation.
Right.
What work you do, you just lose it. So they don't, unless they wanted you to draft the legislation for them.
Right, and which we are not. And what my department is doing is administering civil service until legislation is passed telling us otherwise. We'll continue to do what we've always been doing for them. They did put us on notice that they are considering drafting this legislation, and it should probably be ready in January. That's the last that I've heard about that.
But for the next, they drafted in January, they luckily passed it.
It's a separate civil service governance administration.
But there are ramifications.
But in terms of your budget for next year,
you will
continue to do whatever you're doing now for them.
Correct. Until such time as legislation is passed, I have two employees devoted to civil service in the hospital in my department.
Two.
An analyst and an audit clerk.
Two full-time.
So they will have to continue to be in your budget and work until...
Yeah, I mean, the smartest way to do that, I mean, legislatively, you have to be in a position to be able to do it, and then mechanically, you have to be in a position to do it. So you would think that on two parallel tracks, you have legislative requirements moving down one. It's understandable that if it's not drafted and ready for review, that then at some point it will be. But the more important thing is, until you're actually on the ground over there, able to do what the commissioner does with HR right now for them, till that is ready to go, that can't change. And so, it's belaboring the obvious by saying that, you know, management over there is probably working on a schedule as to when that handoff can take place. So it'll be sometime, I would assume, in 2011. But Judy?
Unless. I mean, it is only September, and the budget hasn't been finalized. Oh, we're not going to. I missed that. At any rate, this could be an area of savings for the county, correct?
Yes.
So
as far as my budget is concerned.
So perhaps there's a way to utilize the Financial Review Committee to say, speed it up, and let's get it into the 2011 budget.
Does it take state legislation to actually make the change?
No. In my understanding, it's not state
legislation. I think it will take them 6 months to a year to do this entire transaction and change.
But they do not
legislation? It's not needed.
She said they drafted state legislation.
They're proposing legislation.
To the county.
To us?
Yes.
No, to the state.
I don't believe this is a state issue.
Yes, it is, because of the fact that they did spin off in 1998 and the personnel are no longer our personnel. They belong to the hospital.
See, right. The hospital is a separate state-created...
Right, it's a public authority.
Benefit corporation. And right now, it operates, the understanding is that Westchester County's government HR satisfies the local civil service requirements as far as administration processing. To get them up as an independent entity for HR purposes, my understanding, requires an act of the state legislature, which they are drawing. At the same time, there's the issue of the handoff and when that actually can happen. But I do know two things. It's in our interest as county HR, it's in our interest to see it happen sooner rather than later because of internal savings. And for all of the problems and all of the reasons that launched this in the first place at the medical center, it's in their interest to see this happen as quickly as possible so they can be handling their own thing.
The other group that would like this, and we've always heard this, is the community college, too. I mean, they'd like to handle their own.
Yeah, they want to pay for it. But we can't, but my question to your point, so we can't do anything until...
Because that's not the way it was presented. It's something for us to bring up for them.
Well, in theory, the only thing we could potentially do, and this we have ongoing discussions with the medical center, I guess, they could pay for it. I mean, we're providing this. I don't know where it fits in our relationships, but we have two people...
I think it was in the original memorandum.
If we have two people working, in a sense, for them, do they pay us for those two people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, there's a charge that they
pay for. Oh, so then it's not up, but then there may not be a financial savings. If they're paying for it now, then there won't be any savings.
Well, considering we're having issues, I'm trying to collect the money. We're charging them for it. I think
it'd be nice to have the
debt. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm trying to find their savings unless it's right. Okay, just...
Maybe we should plan on it.
Yeah. Okay. Because I said we had these ongoing issues, and this is just something else on the table. Mm-hmm. Those people probably cost a couple hundred thousand in total, and where is that in the scheme of things? Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks. So that's the update. Okay, that's the update on the
medical center.
Next, turning the page, we have the current status of the employees who took the state retirement or the county voluntary retirement.
We have to date, we have 333 employees who have taken Part A of the New York State incentive. 132 employees who have taken the county incentive for a total of 465 retirees.
And I guess the deadlines have passed, so that's pretty much the numbers.
Right. And then we're waiting on Part B, which is opens October 1 and runs through close to the end of December. But we don't anticipate having that many in Part B. But with respect to Part A and the county incentive, we have 465 retirees. I think you wanted to know about vacancies, was that?
Have they already left now? I mean, the time's passed, so they actually all have left service.
Yes, they have.
Okay, so I guess that's the number.
Do we have a dollar number on that?
Is there a breakdown by departments, you know, who got hit hard? Harder.
I could get that breakdown.
Yeah, I think that'd be important.
And the dollar equivalent.
Because issues like the public safety is, I mean, you know, probation, correct? Well, it's important everywhere, but I mean, certain jobs are, I don't say needed more than others, but
we should know.
Get a breakdown by department, right?
Right. Yeah. Requests have been made, and
okay.
You'll have that this week.
Numbers and dollars. Sure. Does it include dollars?
No, it does not. But I could talk. Could talk to budget to see if they can
figure
that out.
Yeah, if they put a dollar amount, it would be great. I would think.
Well, I guess this has to be.
I mean, the whole thing was done in order to gain dollars.
You're working on getting a 50% savings. We can't hire everybody back. But part of the deal is you have to create a 50% savings.
Yeah, and this was predicated not by numbers, but by dollars. So really what we want to see are dollars.
Right. Okay, let's get it. So hopefully we'll come back in. But I know we need to see what has to be back to some extent. There'll be correction officers at the door.
There have been correction officers who have been hired back. We have 12 to date who've been hired back. There have been a total of 15 new hires or rehires, and out of the 15, 12 are correction officers.
Yeah, well, that goes to my point. We need to see the department, because certain departments, get hit, they simply have to have...
That's as of September 30th, 2010.
Okay, thank you. That ties in now the status of the overall vacant positions in the county. Do you have an overall number?
The overall vacant positions, with respect to the 465 that have left, we have 53 positions that were filled, but that number is deceiving because of the 53, 29 are filled by promotions within the department, 3 filled by position changes within the department, and 6 filled by appointment from other county departments, and the 15 were the new hires or rehires, of which 12 were correction officers.
But the hires, the 29 from within, they would create 29 vacancies someplace else. If you move them up into those vacant positions, and they came from within the county system,
there should have been.
There should be vacancies someplace else.
There should be.
So the total, I mean, it goes to, you know, where are they, but the total vacancies, frankly, should not have changed. The 29.
I have 465 people who have retired, and I have 53 positions that have been filled, but of those 53, only 15 are really new hires.
Right. Okay. So the others, so there's still remaining vacancies. Other than the 15, the others are all remaining vacancies in some form.
Right. Should be.
There'd be different lines, but they should be vacant. Okay. So that's 465 less 15, so it should be like 450 of those who left.
Correct.
Now, do you have just on an ongoing basis? Do you prepare today to say we're in the whole scheme of the county system? What vacancy lines we've been carrying, you know, as of recently?
No, I thought it was in relation to retirements, but I can get those figures.
I mean, that's something I assume you track on an ongoing basis. All right, so regarding those who left under these plans, 465 minus 15, is that about?
Correct, yes.
Okay, I think that
gives us the information. Anybody have about anything else?
But I'd love to see some numbers in dollars.
Right.
Dollars.
Like right.
Okay.
Dollars.
For the people who have retired.
Yeah, out of the, okay. Yeah, what is our dollar
a savings? Breakdown by department and by a dollar.
Dollars.
Okay.
Please. Thank you.
Commissioner, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions or issues, did we do the minutes? Or did we do the minutes very beginning of this meeting?
Yeah.
I'll entertain a motion to
move.
Moved by Legislator Marcotte, seconded by Legislator Burton. All in favor?
Aye.
We stand adjourned.
Well done. You're good on budget. This is a new side.